Hi, it's Patrick Hutzel from IntensiveCareHotline.com with the second part of the video about the ultimate six-step guide to family meetings with the intensive care team in intensive care. Let's come to number three, your mental positioning. Your mental positioning is absolutely critical. It's one of your biggest leverage points on your way to peace of mind, control, power and influence. The intensive care team, on the one hand, has figured out their mental positioning way before you have even met them. And as I have hinted before, their positioning is based on perceived authority, perceived power, as well as other factors that are happening behind the scenes in intensive care. From the intensive care team's perspective, it's rock solid. It's rock solid because they have to drive an agenda and they are also very rarely challenged by families of critically ill patients. Families of critically ill patients, on the other hand, buy into this limited mindset of 99% of other families in intensive care who believe that they can't change things. They believe that the intensive care team has all the answers and they have no idea how what's happening behind the scenes is really dominating the agenda and is really the elephant in the room. I'll give you a quick real-world example here. Let's just say that your critically ill loved one has been in intensive care for 3 months, is ventilator dependent with tracheostomy, and your critically ill loved one is depressed, has no quality of life, they are heavily dependent on other people, they have no privacy and no dignity, and worst of all, your critically ill loved one has gone through multiple failed attempts to be weaned off the ventilator. It's a vicious cycle that your loved one seems to be unable to escape. You and your family's life is difficult and challenging as well, and you haven't slept properly, you haven't eaten properly, and your family life is suffering too. You are spending far too much time in intensive care, and you are running out of energy. The intensive care team wants to meet with you and your family to talk to you and giving you an update. The intensive care team knows what they are going to say and they know how they are going to say it. The obligatory box of tissues is also waiting for you in the meeting room. Remember, the intensive care team is playing on home ground here if you let them. The intensive care team is most likely framing the situation in a way that suits their agenda. And they most likely will tell you that a withdrawal of treatment or a limitation of treatment might be, quote unquote, in the best interest of your critically ill loved one. The intensive care team certainly won't tell you that they think they are losing money if they continue treating your loved one. They won't tell you that they are experiencing bed pressures from other potential admissions. They certainly won't tell you that they are fed up with continuing treatment. They won't tell you that your critically ill loved one doesn't fit any medical research criteria. And they also won't tell you that they think that you and your family, quote unquote, will play along because the intensive care team thinks that you and your family don't really know and understand what has been happening so far. The way that you and your family have interacted so far didn't leave the impression that you had any control, power and influence as you went along with everything that the intensive care team has suggested so far. In order to challenge the assumptions of the intensive care team, you and your family need to have strong mental positioning and you need to believe that you have control, power and influence. It's making all the difference because the intensive care team doesn't expect that positioning, and by you having the belief that you can have control, power and influence, as well as by you having an awareness of the intensive care team's agenda, you can position yourself accordingly. Ask the right questions and not take no for an answer. If you believe that your critically ill loved one can get through their challenging situation, then you should make that very clear to the intensive care team and you should follow your gut and intuition because your gut never lies. Your positioning is absolutely crucial and critical to getting what you want, irrespective of what the intensive care team is telling you and irrespective of what the odds may be for your critically ill loved one. You can always change these odds in your favor if you think that you can. Let's move on to number 4. Your body language. Most families of critically ill patients in intensive care have poor body language when they first come to intensive care. After all, they are experiencing a new, challenging, frightening, stressful, and overwhelming situation. It's a normal reaction, and generally speaking, families of critically ill patients tend to have poor body posture that communicates to the intensive care team implicitly or explicitly that you have no peace of mind, no power, no control, and no influence whatsoever. Signs of poor body language and poor body postures that I observed over the many years working in intensive care as a nurse are things like head down, slumped back posture, avoiding eye contact, crossed arms, slumped shoulders, weak handshake, fiddly hands, and sweat on people's forehead. Now, don't get me wrong, that's normal, and we all show those signs of poor body language if we are in a challenging and difficult situation. However, your job is to notice that it's happening, that you have poor body language and poor posture, and then change it. Now, imagine you walk into the intensive care unit with your head held high, with your chin up, with your chest forward, your shoulders back. You make strong eye contact. Your arms are comfortably normal and you don't have your arms crossed. And when you shake the doctor's or the nurse's hands, you have a strong and powerful handshake. Do you think the intensive care team will notice? You bet. How do you feel by displaying powerful body language? Do you feel like you are now ready to face this challenging situation? Do you feel now like you are ready to deal with whatever life is throwing at you? You bet. Most families of critically ill patients in intensive care that I have seen have no or very little awareness what their body language communicates to the outside world, and over again do I see that when they receive bad news that their body language gets even worse. Your job is to keep an open posture and strong body language at all times. The message that you display with your body language will tell your conscious, your subconscious, the intensive care team, and your critically ill loved one that you can handle the situation. You are now well positioned to ask the right questions and to also ask for what you want, irrespective of what the intensive care team is telling you. Only then will you find out what's really happening. Let's move on to number 5. Your questions to the intensive care team are your biggest leverage point and are critical for the level of peace of mind, control, power, and influence you will have. To get the outcome you desire for your critically ill loved one, you need to ask the right questions. The intensive care team doesn't expect you to ask the right questions because very rarely do they deal with families who know what the right questions are. Very rarely have I seen families of critically ill patients asking the right questions. Most families of critically ill patients focus on the clinical questions, and the reality is that when it comes to the clinical questions, the intensive care team will always have the upper hand. They can twist and turn the prognosis and the diagnosis of your critically ill loved one in whichever way they like, and they keep you at arm's length, so to speak, because that's the intensive care team's area of expertise. But if you hone in on the questions that relate to the intensive care team's positioning that is based on their decision making behind the scenes, that is based on their interests and their agenda that goes way beyond your critically ill loved one's well-being. That's when you get peace of mind, control, power and influence. The intensive care team doesn't expect you to ask questions that relate to the stuff that's happening behind the scenes. And if anything, they will be surprised by you having done your research. The intensive care team doesn't expect you to challenge them, because after all, they are professionals who know what's best. You see, medicine and intensive care is an antiquated system where mainly doctors still think they know what's best, because they often still believe that they are superior to everybody else. But the bigger challenge often is that families and the general public let them behave that way, and they don't question doctors' perceived authority. The good news is that even though it's an antiquated system, we're not living in the 19th century anymore. Thankfully, we're living in the 21st century. Information is readily available so that you can do your own research and you can make up your own mind, and therefore you can challenge the intensive care team's assumptions and their positioning. Let's move on to our point number 6. Learn how to control your emotions in a family meeting. Because if you don't control your emotions, the intensive care team knows how to use your emotions to their advantage. Emotions are generally speaking a healthy sign. It shows that you are alive, and it shows that you've gotten passion for whatever situation you are dealing with. That's the good news. However, many, if not most people, can't control their emotions, and therefore their emotions are their biggest enemy. In a situation where your loved one has been admitted to intensive care for critical illness, your emotions are generally running wild. There can be a lot of tension and drama, and even more so in a family meeting. Remember the obligatory box of tissues on the table in the family meeting room in or nearby the intensive care unit? What a powerful framing by the intensive care team. The intensive care team expects you to cry after they've delivered the bad news. It's explicitly expected with the box of tissues on the table. But you already know that you need to ask for another venue for the meeting anyway, don't you? I'll give you another real-world example of how the intensive care team is playing with your emotions in a family meeting, so that you understand how it works and so that you understand how the intensive care team can manipulate you and your family. Let's say your critically ill loved one has been in intensive care for about a week after a car accident. Your critically ill loved one sustained a severe head and brain injury with severe rib fractures as well. Your critically ill loved one had a craniectomy, which is an opening and removal of some of the skull to decompress the brain to reduce the intracranial brain pressures, which is the pressure in the brain. The rib fractures also damaged your critically ill loved one's heart, so that they went into an irregular heart rhythm. Not a good scenario and not a good starting point. The situation is pretty bleak from the intensive care team's point of view. However, you and your family are very optimistic that your loved one can pull through, because your critically ill loved one has shown in the past that they can deal with setbacks in life and they are used to dealing with adversity. If anyone can do it, then it's your loved one. You are convinced that they will survive their ordeal and come out good at the other end. You and your family had an extremely stressful week, especially since you haven't slept properly, you haven't eaten properly, and you know that you've spent far too much time in intensive care, almost day and night. And if you have been at home, you woke up in the middle of the night feeling compelled to ring the ICU to get an update on your loved one's condition. You feel like you are walking on the edge, and in fact, you are close to a nervous breakdown. You have also noticed that the intensive care team has been relatively negative from the start, and you felt like they have been painting a doom and gloom picture, and you almost felt like they have been deliberately trying to get your hopes down. The next challenge is that you and your family have been asked to come to the ICU the next day at 3 p.m. to have a family meeting with the intensive care team. You wonder why the intensive care team wants to have a family meeting. You felt like you have been given updates regularly by the intensive care team, and you and your family know that the situation is difficult and life-threatening. But you and your family have been positive all the way along, knowing that your critically ill loved one is quite strong and knows how to deal with adversity. You and your other family members have now arrived in the intensive care unit, and before you go into the family meeting with the intensive care team, you visited your critically ill loved one and you've been updated by the bedside nurse about your critically ill loved one's condition. The nurse said that things are still the same, that your loved one is in a critical condition, that they are still having high pressures in the brain, and that the heart is still in an irregular rhythm. That's also compromising your loved one's blood pressure to the point where your loved one requires inotropes, which are intravenous drugs that increase blood pressure, in order to maintain a decent blood pressure. The inotropic support, which are the drugs for blood pressure, have now been maximized and have reached a dangerously high level. So, there haven't been any news really, and you are anxiously going into the family meeting with the intensive care team. Once you and your family are entering the dark and unfriendly meeting room, you notice again the box of tissues on the table, but you're not paying too much attention as yet. Let's look at the meeting. Besides you and your family members, there is the senior intensive care consultant present, who you have met briefly during the week, two other more junior doctors who have been speaking with you regularly, and the bedside nurse. The senior intensive care consultant opens the meeting and explains the situation that the intensive care team has been dealing with all week since your critically ill loved one has been admitted, and he stresses the fact that things aren't going too well and that he fears for the life of your critically ill loved one. The ongoing high pressures in your loved one's brain, in spite of the decompression of the brain where some skull has been removed, it appears to not being effective, as the intensive care team is still having issues to control those high pressures in the brain. The intensive care consultant explains that ongoing high pressures in the brain have a tendency to damage the brain irreversibly. Furthermore, your critically ill loved one's heart has been damaged, and the heart is beating in an irregular rhythm and is therefore not maintaining a decent blood pressure. In order to maintain a decent blood pressure, inotropes, which are blood pressure drugs, have been started in order to maintain a decent blood pressure. However, the inotropic support is now at a dangerously high level, where the intensive care team fears that your loved one's heart may not be able to cope. The intensive care consultant is now looking at you and your family and is asking whether you are having any questions so far. You and your family deny, and the intensive care consultant continues and says that he thinks that it is, quote unquote, in the best interest of your critically ill loved one to either limit treatment or even withdraw treatment and let your critically ill loved one die, as the senior consultant feels a recovery is unlikely, and he also feels that if your loved one is recovering, that they wouldn't have any quote-unquote quality of life. At this point, you and your family are starting to cry, and you are reaching for the obligatory box of tissues in the meeting room. You and your family are overwhelmed and you feel powerless by the negative emotions you are experiencing. So, what is really happening here? And what are the dynamics at play? So I really need to stop here and I need to zoom out of the conversation in order to explain what's really happening here on a deep emotional and psychological level. Most families of critically ill patients, when faced with a challenge like this, automatically react with overwhelming negative emotions and they are unable to channel their feelings and emotions into anything positive. They are usually so overwhelmed and challenged by facing the mortality of their critically ill loved one for the first time head on. By you and your family being removed from the bedside, where you are at least able to physically see your critically ill loved one, and by you and your family being in a dark and unfriendly meeting room where the intensive care team is basically playing on home ground, you and your family are more likely to give in to whatever the intensive care team is suggesting to you. You and your family are most likely also feeling an appreciation of what the intensive care team has done for your critically ill loved one so far. And that's exactly the point where the rubber hits the road, so to speak. Prior to the meeting, you felt like your critically ill loved one will survive their ordeal. But the psychology, the dynamics, and the framing by the intensive care team of the situation makes it very difficult for you and for your family to challenge the intensive care team's positioning, and you and your family are unable to really challenge the intensive care team's positioning because of your overwhelming emotions. The most dangerous point for you and your family is that since you are feeling an appreciation of what the intensive care team has done so far for your critically ill loved one, you implicitly or explicitly don't want to disappoint them, even though you know that you should challenge their positioning, and even though you know that you should start asking questions about the intensive care unit's financial interests, about their budget, about other admissions waiting for an ICU bed, about their medical research interests, etc., etc. But that's exactly the point where the intensive care team is playing with your emotions in order to get what they want and in order to continuously drive their agenda. This is your lowest point, so to speak, and the intensive care team knows that because they have seen it over and over again. They know that the law of reciprocity kicks in at that point, however counterintuitive it may sound to you. All human relations are built on reciprocity, and it's all about give and take. The variation here is that you may, quote unquote, trade in your critically ill loved one's life for everything the intensive care team has done so far. Trust me, I have seen it over and over again. The same rules apply if the intensive care team wants to continue treatment and you and your family think it's hopeless and it only prolongs your loved one's suffering. You and your family know that your critically ill loved one would not want to be in such a difficult situation where they are suffering. If the intensive care team wants to continue treatment because they have interests way beyond your critically ill loved one's well-being, such as financial interests by continuing treatment to make money, or if they have medical research interests in your critically ill loved one's case, or if they want to keep a bed occupied for a little longer, the intensive care team will also grab you at your weakest point, where you want to reciprocate for whatever they have done so far for your critically ill loved one. Your challenge is to have an awareness what powerful emotions are at play in those situations, and also to have an awareness where your low points are, and to not give in during your low points. Thankfully, you are, however, in a different position now, because you have learned a tremendous amount about what's happening behind the scenes in intensive care. You have learned about the dynamics, the psychology, the power play, the emotions, and the intrigue. And now you know what questions you need to ask, and you are aware of the law of reciprocity and how it applies to family meetings with the intensive care team. I really hope that this video has served you well, and I hope that you have gained even more insights of how you can effectively deal with your fears, your frustrations, your struggles, your vulnerability, and how you can turn the situation around so that you feel powerful, in control, influential, so that you are mentally well positioned and mentally strong to deal with adversity. Hopefully, I was able to elevate your thinking and also to lift your spirits. I also hope that I will see you in our other videos so that you can find even more strength, more power, more energy, greater influence, and also hope in your challenging journey through the intensive care landscape. For more information on a variety of topics within intensive care, check out more of our ebooks, audios, and videos, and also read our blog for more tips and strategies, and check out our Your Questions Answered section. Thank you so much for being part of our video series, and I'll see you soon in another video. This is Patrick Hutzel from intensivecarehotline.com. Thank you.